Hi, and welcome to our special birthday episode of Seen and Unseen Aloud. My name is Natalie Garrett, and I'm the narrator of Seen and Unseen Aloud, and it's been my absolute joy to narrate and share curated articles from the Seen and Unseen website every week since 20th of March 2023. Over the last year, we've been joined by 11,500 listeners, and it's great to have you with us today, whether you've been with us from the beginning or just found us for the first time. I want to say a big thank you to those of you who got in touch with requests for this episode. We're delighted to be able to include some of those suggestions. It's also been so fun to find out where everyone is in the world as you're listening. In the UK, lots of you listen to Seen and Unseen Aloud while you're going for a walk or a run, while you're doing the washing up, or some ironing, or while you're on the commute to work. A big hello to our friends on the South Coast, our friends in Liverpool, Hackney and Oxford, in Exeter, Cardiff and Nottingham, Armagh, Bolton and Bognor Regis, Dungannon, Manchester, Margate and Glasgow. A big shout out to our Seen and Unseen Aloud friends in the US, a big good day to everyone in Australia and New Zealand, buongiorno ai nostri amici in Italia, bonjour à nos amis de France et du Canada, hallo an unsere Freunde in Deutschland und der Schweiz. It's also exciting, and forgive me, I don't have any more languages, that we have friends in Malawi and South Africa, in Thailand, Morocco, Denmark, Russia, Iceland and Liechtenstein. Wherever you are in the world, we're so glad you're with us. And every week, we're here for you. When you need to be eyes free or hands free, but still want to hear Christian perspectives on just about everything. And so the counting is done, and I can reveal the top two most popular articles. Strangers and the Sound of Belonging, written by Seen and Unseen's very own Belle Tindall, about going to a Jacob Collier concert. This article was one of the very first published on Seen and Unseen as one of our most popular requests on Seen and Unseen Aloud. Also, N.T. Wright's Delving into the Easter Story, When Creation and Justice Converge. This was also quite an early piece on Seen and Unseen and is still one of the most popular articles. These articles represent the wonderful wide range of writers, thought and perspectives that are always found on Seen and Unseen Aloud. So wherever you are in the world, and whether you're doing the ironing or travelling to work or walking the dog, get ready to explore the seen and unseen. Strangers and the Sound of Belonging by Belle Tindall. I had an empty couple of minutes to play with, so mostly due to muscle memory, I found myself opening my Instagram app. Habitually, I do this multiple times a day, and mostly to no profound avail. But this one day, something caught my eye and sent me down a spiral of curiosity, and judging by how astronomically viral it went, it seems I was not the only spiralling one. It was footage of Jacob Collier performing in Rome. Jacob is a singer, songwriter, jazz instrumentalist, and general music prodigy. But that's not the most captivating thing about him. The Collier phenomena has erupted because of the way he turns his audience of strangers into a perfectly tuned, beautifully united choir. And this particular night in Rome, he managed to steer this audience to sing beyond the major scale and onto the far more complex chromatic scale, something he's been working towards for years. The most striking thing about this minute-long clip it's not the beautifully raw sound, although it really is something to behold, but what this sound is communicating, a tangible sense of belonging. We each know how it feels to belong, and we are also acutely aware of the inverse, how it feels when a sense of belonging is lacking, and feelings of isolation creep in and make themselves at home in its absence. But for the sake of clarity, perhaps a working definition would be helpful at this point. And for that, I turn to the Psychology Dictionary. The PD defines belonging as a feeling of being taken in and accepted as part of a group, thus fostering a sense of belonging. It also relates to being approved of and accepted by society in general, also called belongingness. The notion of belonging or belongingness has been well studied, and still its intrinsic power is staggering to consider. According to the research published by the Australian Journal of Psychology, belonging is a universal and fundamental human need, one that may just be as important as food, shelter, and physical safety. So intrinsic is it that the lack of belonging, resulting in acute loneliness, is attributed to a 26% increase in the risk of premature mortality. This has led the World Health Organization to officially recognize isolation as a determinant of health, placing it in the same category as smoking, physical inactivity, and excessive alcohol consumption. Further research suggests that our brains perceive and subsequently react to social pain in the same way they are designed to react to physical pain. Releasing opioids and other instinctive painkillers when encountering a lack of belonging, our brains are detecting literal pain within us. As humans, we are susceptible to suffering social injuries, and it seems that the subconscious parts of our brains take those injuries much more seriously than their conscious counterparts. Subsequently, when we speak of a person's need to belong, we're speaking of a need that has significant mental, emotional, spiritual, behavioural, and physical repercussions. A need that is intersectional, if you will. It is a central construct at the core of our humanity and a defining variable in how we perceive reality. It could be suggested, considering all of this, that human beings were simply made to belong. The necessity of belonging is woven into our makeup. Over the final scene of the 2009 film World's Greatest Dad, Robin Williams' voice delivers a line that is so profound, it lingers in your mind long after the end credits have finished rolling. He says, "I used to think the worst thing in life would be to end up all alone. It's not. The worst thing in life is to end up with people who make you feel alone." There's a staggering wisdom in that. Namely, that belonging is not the inevitable outcome of simply getting people into one room. That's the difference between the Collier concert, where the audience are truly belonging to each other, if only for an evening, and the coffee shop, where I'm sitting right now, filled with people using laptops and headphones as a form of defence against the threat of small talk, each of us belonging only to ourselves. If it were the case that proximity equated to belonging, urbanisation and the subsequent squeezing of populations into close quarters would have surely deterred the epidemic of loneliness that the West currently finds itself in. And yet, it is not uncommon for neighbour and stranger to be identities that coexist. And what about the role of social media? Access to one another has never been so readily available. The world has never been so small, and its population so close. And yet, what social media so often provides is the affirmation and amplification of feelings of isolation. No, proximity alone is not the answer. Will van der Hart writes that people don't just want to be with other people, they want to belong with them. Christianity has a lot to say on the subject of belonging and belongingness. The anonymous author of the Creation Literature, the chapters which act as the start line for the biblical narrative, notes how the only thing that was unsatisfactory about our freshly created world was the initial isolation of humanity. Such solitude was at odds with the blueprint for human flourishing and defied our design as intrinsically relational beings. The Christian faith therefore offers an explanation to humanity's fundamental need to belong. It presents a spiritual why behind the aforementioned neurological findings. The biblical narratives, the psychological research, they are united, if you pardon the pun, in their assessment of the human condition. Namely, that belonging is simply a non-negotiable. It's buried inside our biology. So perhaps it's no wonder Jacob Collier has caught the world's attention. He's providing a simple soundtrack to one of our most ingrained needs. It seems that what has long been communicated through ancient spiritual texts and more recently affirmed through endless psychological theories can also be communicated with a simple, harmonious sound. To watch that clip is to watch thousands of strangers belong to the room, belong to the moment, belong to the sound. In 1948, author and theologian A.W. Tozer pondered the nature of unity and human connection. He asked, "Has it ever occurred to you that 100 pianos all tuned to the same fork are automatically tuned to each other?" If we were ever looking for an answer to this profound question, we need to look no further than Jacob Collier's audience and their sound of belonging. When Creation and Justice Converge, by N.T. Wright. What on earth might the Easter story have to say about our climate catastrophe? What does this ancient story mean to us today, who know that the universe is 14 billion years old, and that, according to the best predictions, one day entropy will have its way with our world, leading to the universe either cooling down as it expands or rushing back together as gravity reasserts itself? The big chill or the big crunch? And what more urgently might it mean in a world where we have woken up not only to man-made climate change, but also to frightening levels of toxic pollution in our seas, in the atmosphere? John's Gospel is one of the sources of that ancient story, and the way the author tells it gives us an answer. Like Shakespeare, John does nothing by accident. The way the author introduces the story of Easter reaches far beyond the central fact of Jesus rising again from the dead. John's point is that with that extraordinary event, a new creation is launched. And that means hope, not just for individual humans, but for all creation. On the first day of the week, very early, while it was still dark. That's how John begins the story. 20 chapters earlier, at the start of his book, he deliberately echoed the start of the book of Genesis. In the beginning was the Word. He has told his story in a great sequence of seven signs representing, as it were, the week of creation itself. Now, with Jesus' resurrection, a new week is beginning. The eighth day of creation, if you like. It takes everyone by surprise. At the time, many Jewish people had longed and prayed for God's new day to dawn. But nobody had imagined it would look like this. A young Jewish prophet announcing that it was time for God to become king at last, being brutally executed by the ruling authorities, and then rising again from the dead. The hope of resurrection, cherished by many Jews at the time, was the hope for all God's people to be given new bodies to share in God's new world, the world in which heaven and earth would at last become one. Nobody imagined that this might happen in advance, as it were, to one person ahead of time. But by the time John writes his gospel, he has reflected long and hard on what it all means. When he says on the first day of the week, which he repeats a little later in case we missed it, he is pointing to the truth that Paul expressed when he wrote that if anyone belongs to the Messiah, there is a new creation. With Jesus, and then with his followers, we see in microcosm that the new creation has been launched. This truth, central to the early Christians, has long been obscured by the influx of Greek philosophy into Christian thinking. For Plato, and those Christians who looked to him to help explain their faith, the point of it all was not to renew the present creation, but to leave it behind. They suppose, as many Christians do to this day, that the aim of their faith was to go to heaven after they died, where they would at last see God. But the central story of the Bible, stretching back into Israel's scriptures, but focused now on the story of Jesus, is that heaven was supposed to come to earth. That, after all, is what Jesus himself taught his followers to pray. The point was not that we or our souls would go and live with God. The point was that God would come and live with us. The God in question is the Creator God. His aim, emphasized repeatedly in the Bible, is to renew his good creation, flooding it with his presence as the waters cover the sea. That is the biblical hope, quite different from that of Plato and his followers. St. Paul insists, at the climax of his greatest letter, that this will happen through a powerful, convulsive, fresh action of God. All creation, he says, is groaning, like a woman going into labour, awaiting the new world which is to be born. And he sees Jesus' followers as themselves groaning in their present suffering. A majority of Christians in Paul's world, just like a significant number in our own day, were being persecuted for their faith. And Paul encourages them to see that suffering as part of the larger cosmic labour pains. But then, he says, God's own spirit is also groaning within us, so that the new world, which is to be born, will come by the same divine agency that raised Jesus from the dead. In fact, Paul's claim could be summarised that way. God will do for the whole creation at the last what he did for Jesus at Easter. The message of the resurrection isn't just about God rewarding Jesus for his own terrible suffering, nor is it simply about there being hope beyond death for his followers. It is about new creation, a new world in which we are all invited to share, not just eventually, but already in the present. Looking at the evidence, the present state of the world, it might indeed seem that the promise of new creation is just a fantasy. But the message of Jesus' resurrection was never designed to fit into the expectations people already had. Everybody knew perfectly well that dead people don't rise. The Jews believed that one day all God's people would be raised because they believed in two things about God. First, that he had made creation and made it good. Second, that he was committed to putting right everything that had gone wrong. Creation and justice converge at this point. Resurrection and new creation. But Jesus' resurrection, bursting into the world unexpectedly, like an important guest arriving several hours early when the family's all still asleep, adds another dimension to this. In Jesus, God himself has come forward in time to meet his tired and groaning world halfway. When the early Christians tell the story, they indicate that this is above all else an act of love, of rescuing, of recreating love. And that love invites an answering love, which takes the form of both faith itself and of allegiance, personal commitment. It takes basically the same faith to believe that God will one day renew the whole creation, flooding it with his glorious presence, as it takes to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. And that faith is awakened again and again as people hear the news about Jesus and realise that it is a message of love. The love of the Creator God for his wounded and weary world. With that faith and that love, there comes as well a new vocation. If Jesus represents the long-term hope of God's people arriving unexpectedly in advance in the present time, then part of the point is to equip people who follow him with his own spirit so that they can be agents of new creation even in the present time. That means a vocation to be small working models of new creation, to engage in advance in the tasks of creation care and renewal, and to encourage those working to address the major challenges of global warming and pollution. We are meant to bring into the world such a measure of justice and beauty as we can, to model in communal and personal life what the Creator God always intended and what will come to pass in the ultimate new creation. We are meant to be people of hope, not just people who are motivated by the personal hope of sharing God's new world, but people through whom that hope comes true in the present time in a thousand living ways, all of them anticipations of, and hence signposts towards, that final new creation. Thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe to this podcast to get more curated articles from Seen and Unseen Aloud. We hope you discover a world that is greater, more full of meaning and sense than you ever imagined.